Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
It's February in Chicago. It's not February in Costa Rica. It's not February in Florida or Southern California. This is Chicago. It's cold and it snows. And I'm Judge Dibbs. I'm the real Judge Dibbs. And it's time to get out the sacred Dibbstitution, the sacred scrolls, as it were, to explain some things to you. Dibbs is a Chicago winter tradition. In a heavy snowstorm, you dig out a street parking space in front of your house. You can claim that space with junk from your basement or garage to mark that parking space. I didn't invent the practice, but I guess I'm the first columnist to call it by its rightful name, Dibbs. How do I know that? A colleague at the paper searched frantically for evidence that I was not the first one to call it Dibbs, and then he couldn't find the evidence and had to, bless his heart, concede, grudgingly, the truth that I was the first one to call it Dibbs. Like I give two figs. It doesn't matter. And I guess they're having a Twitter fight now over who called it what. Don't you have some more important things to do, guys, than fight over who called it Dibbs? Like maybe, I don't know, take some laxative or Google yourself or something. The thing is, Dibbs is an important feature in American life because Americans believe, at least they did, that a person is entitled to the fruit of their labor. What does that mean? You dig it out, you claim it, because the city isn't going to dig it out. You do it. And once you do, it's yours for a time. When the snow goes away or when you can drive over the snow, then you can't call it Dibbs. Chicago isn't like all of Chinatown, like when the outfit used to call Dibbs in July on city streets with folding chairs, and nobody dared park in the spot of Hopalong Kasadich. When you can drive over it, it's not yours anymore, so Dibbs goes away. Have some common sense. Now, there are two kinds of people who deal with Dibbs. Those who appreciate it, like me, even though I don't have to use it. And those who hate it. And who are these people who hate it? They're commies. Or, I don't know, socialists. And they have a fantasy that we'll all walk arm in arm, shoveling each other's parking space out on a snowy day. Perhaps we sing as we shovel, like, you know, that Soviet theme, the Internationale. But here's the thing. Chicago is not a Frank Capra movie, and it's not that movie Witness about the Amish raising the barn together and gossiping about the English. People shovel their own parking space. And you really shouldn't break Dibbs and steal someone else's space unless you don't mind someone getting out the hose and turning your car into a big block of ice. The rule of Dibbs, again, is simple. If you can drive over the snow, there is no Dibbs. When the snow's gone, no Dibbs. You're all not Chinatown outfit guys claiming Dibbs in July. And if you dare use a blue virgin, yeah, I've seen it, a blue virgin to mark Dibbs, then you know what? The Dibbstitution says you're going to hell and you're going to burn for eternity. So enjoy yourself. Most public officials leave Dibbs alone. But every once in a while, one of them will try to break out of the pack and call attention to themselves by hating on Dibbs. And I'm surprised, but our friend Alderman Ray Lopez of the 15th Ward did that. He ordered Streets and Sand to throw the junk away. Ray? What the? What are you doing? Coming off like some woke socialist commie. Are you singing the Internationale? Ray Lopez, you've got some explaining to do right here. And until then, we've got Ted Dabrowski of wirepoints.org, great budget analyst, to break down the, I don't know what you'd call it, BS, I guess, offered by Governor Commodius Maximus on how he's going to take care of us peasants in Illinois by playing his tricky numbers game and run for re-election on all the great stuff he's giving us. Co-host Jeff Carlin is here. I think Jeff is anti-dibs. I just got a feeling. Executive producer of WGN Radio, my friend, lover of cats, baker of pies. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist at johncassnews.com. Subscribe and give yourself the gift of common sense. And where are you? As another otherwise sane and reasonable alderman, Ray Lopez, goes full commie jihad against dibs and joins the coronavirus, I guess, dibs, Karens. And the governor sets up a booth to fleece taxpayers by playing his hide the pee game under deftly moving walnut shells. Where are you? You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
That the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
Okay, so in the interest of being fair and balanced and unafraid, as I often am, and Jeff too, where our guest is, as I promised, is Ted Dabrowski of Wirepoints, an excellent analysis and analyst on all things taxes and economics in Illinois, the state that's going down the drain, which is why people are leaving in busloads. But first, in order to save it, the Republicans are putting up candidates to go against Pritzker, and one of them, guys, is imploding, at least in my view. I know it's early, and I know there's always a way, I guess, for somebody with billions of dollars to clean up a candidate, but Aurora Mayor Richard Irvin seems to be, to me, to be imploding. And I watched a video interview that he did with Mike Flannery at Channel 32, Fox 32, in which he basically cut short the questions and said, I'm not going to answer. Bye. We're done. And I wondered, could we listen to part of this?
He declined to rule out raising taxes or fees himself, but said he would propose some permanent tax cuts. He could not name any specific state spending he would have to eliminate.
Because I don't hear a single cut.
Well, I don't know, absolutely.
And I don't hear a promise to rule out tax and fee increases.
You know, and I don't want to make empty promises to the residents of Illinois without identifying what the issues are, identifying what can be cut. But we did exactly that as mayor of Aurora.
Ervin said he opposes abortion, but declined to clarify several important points.
Pro-life.
Any exceptions for rape, incest, the life of the mother?
You know, there are always exceptions. Rape, incest, life of the mother, you know, things.
You would allow abortion in those circumstances? You would allow abortion in those circumstances?
I think we're done.
You think we're done? Guys, what is going on with this guy, Ervin? What is happening here?
Well, John, you and I were talking about this offline, but it seems like he is not ready for the big show. I mean, this is the same guy who also got blasted by one of his GOP primary rivals, saying he doesn't understand the GOP talking points well enough to give them back to Flannery. It kind of shows that the whole system here is a mess.
Are you saying that Republicans in Illinois, the Republican Party in Illinois, the handmaidens, the combined handmaidens of Democrats all my life have talking points?
Yes, this is the I hate to pull back the curtain on everything, but yes, GOP and Dems put out talking points a couple times a day. I'm on those press release lists, and it literally is, here's a topic of the day, here's our official verbiage on it, please use this. And I mean, it's effective to keep a party coalesced, but when you say that out loud or remind people, it just shows you that, you know, someone else is pulling the strings no matter what happens.
Well, in this case, I want to hear from Ted Dabrowski, because Ted cares about Illinois at wire points. I know they're not a political endorsing organization, but they, you know, analysts can analyze. What do you think, Ted?
Well, Jeff and John, you don't need to analyze any of this. You don't need talking points. And if you're a serious candidate for turning around Illinois, you don't need any help from anybody. The first thing you need to know is we're losing more people than virtually every state in the country, right? When you look at our out-migration numbers, when you look at our population shrinkage, that's number one. Number two is we got the second highest property taxes in the country. You know, do you need talking points for that? People have been complaining about this for decades. Number three, we got the biggest pension debts. That's, you know, destroying our budget and taking all the money away from day-to-day stuff and throwing it into this pension plan that's broke. You know, and fourth, we got, I can't remember what the fourth was going to be, but the list is long. And, you know, any candidate, and, you know, of course, Ervin is one of them, he should have been right on top of that. Yeah, I'm going to cut taxes. I mean, when you look at our combined state and local taxes, they're some of the highest in the country. And any candidate should be committal to bringing those down, not hedging. And, you know, it should be part of what it boils down to is that the Republican Party, most of them don't have any principles, and so they don't know what to say. They're trying to figure out what to say politically.
You mean, that's interesting that you'd say that, because I agree. The Republican Party, I don't even know what it is now. I used to know it as a white shoe club, you know, white shoes, white belt, leisure suits for Jim Thompson and Big Bill Cellini to make deals and fortunes for their friends. I don't see what it is now, except a group that, I don't know, does not know what it's about.
Well, they're running scared, John, and they've been running scared for, you know, since I came back to Illinois in the Chicago area back in 2007, I've watched them. They don't know what to do. They always just want a seat at the table. You know, Madigan had such good control.
Yeah.
They wanted a seat at the table to make bad deals better. I think that's what they always said. You know, so they stopped laying down the line of what they're for, what they support. You know, they couldn't figure out how to take on pensions. They couldn't figure out how to keep taxes from going up. And so they started just saying, well, we'll make things less bad. And we want a seat at the table. And you know, now they're super minorities. They've been that way for a while, and they have no influence. And, you know, they've forgotten that the way to turn this around is to actually make themselves look different from the Democratic Party, not be the same, or, you know, they're effectively, you can't tell the difference. And that's been part of the problem for a long time.
One of the things, guys, that Jeff and Ted, that viewers or listeners should realize is that I've only been covering politics for the last 600 years in Illinois. And I think a lot of the animosity that's coming for Ervin is related to the process and the consultants around Ken Griffin, the billionaire, who wants to take on Pritzker with a proxy. And apparently he's settled on Irvin. But I think that conservatives are looking at the process and seeing, is Mike Zulowitz hanging around? Who's hanging around this candidate? And it gives them pause because they don't want to be played as they have been or feel they have been in the past. And Irvin comes on and he's unprepared. He wouldn't talk to Craig Wall when on the day he announced. He ran away from that interview. Then he did Marianne Ahern, Craig Wall, and now Mike Flannery. And I have to agree with Dan Prof that Mike Flannery asked the tougher questions of the group.
Well, I mean, he certainly asked the question that is probably the historically in Illinois, the biggest, you know, hinge point where you can get the GOP or Republicans in the state, which is predominantly blue in the densest areas, to agree on. I mean, you could get Southern Illinois Republicans and Chicago Republicans to agree on that, the abortion thing, because we saw that with the runner. It's kind of what partially tanked him. And so I'm not surprised that Flannery asked that question, because Flannery is probably one of the best in the biz right now in Chicago.
But he's also clearly a guy who seems to lean Democrat. I mean, I've only been watching him for 30 years, and it seems that he's hooked into that Democratic organization.
You're not wrong, but I think at the same time too, you know, as Ted was talking too, this state is somehow, you know, the GOP has lost its way as far as an image or a definable characteristics of who they are. And in that essence, if they're not talking up, they're not squeaking loud enough, nobody's going to know what they are, what they're about. So everybody's going to seem like they're of the left. And I think that's probably what we're seeing in most, especially the gubernatorial race level, reporters and such asking questions or seem like they're vain in a Democratic spin. It's really just because, you know, decades of Democratic control have kind of tainted, or not tainted, but colored everything, if you will.
Yeah, you know, what I argue is that this is the best moment. This is the best moment for a candidate, be a Democrat, and okay, it's not going to happen, or a Republican, to differentiate themselves from everybody else. Because if you look at where we are, and the fourth thing I was thinking was the credit rating, right? We're two notches away from junk, not one anymore, but two, still the worst in the country. You know, even worse than New Jersey. So you know, there's a great way to separate oneself from the crowd. And you know right now the status quo wants to treat criminals as victims. They need to treat criminals as criminals, right? One side wants to treat the unions as the almighty, and somebody needs to put the taxpayer, the ordinary resident, first. So you got to roll back all these collective bargaining reforms.
Amen, Ted Dabrowski.
Yeah, and another,
or at least treat the tool slingers, the electricians, the carpenters, construction guys with a little respect, along with the plumbers, because they're the ones who have to pay just as everyone else for the public sector.
Yeah, let me make myself clear. I'm talking about public sector unions, not private sector unions, for sure. Right. You know, the other thing is, why do we treat ordinary taxpayers as second-class citizens when it comes to retirements, and public sector workers get these beautifully guaranteed, you know, constitutionally protected pensions, you know, lifetime guarantees? No, we can't have two classes of people in Illinois. That's why the other class keeps leaving, because they're not protected. So it's a really easy time to differentiate yourself. But, this was a chance that I think watching Irvin, he had a chance and he didn't offer up anything really, right? He actually showed that he wasn't going to offer anything.
I know. And unfortunately, some comm shop person is going to take the blame with these consultants whispering in Griffin's ear. You know, somebody, some poor comm shop person, and it just adds to the decay of the party.
John, let me just, I want to be really cautious about these Republicans that run. they're still thinking. I'm not saying all of them, okay? And we could try to say which ones aren't thinking that way, I think. But they're all still thinking that they're going to have to do a grand bargain with the Democrats. You know, right. That at some point, well, you know, you give us pension reform, you know, Harmon and Pritzker, et cetera, whatever. You give us pension reform. I guess Pritzker would be out. But you give us pension reform and we'll agree to a tax hike. And I argue that that's you know, the next level of suicide for Illinois, because Illinois have over and over and over been the ones that get hit all the time. We can't do another tax hike. More people will leave. So I don't want a grand bargain. I want us to do the reforms first. We can talk about, you know, tax hikes 10 years down the road. Give us all the reforms first, fix this place, and we'll see how it you know, plays out. Let's attract more people into the state. Let's attract more businesses into the state.
How do you do that, Ted, when everyone's leaving?
Well, right. Yeah, it's really hard. That's why you have to flip the whole message. Think about it. You have to flip, you know, we're going to pass a constitutional amendment. And that's the first thing Irvin should say. We're going to pass a constitutional amendment to reform pensions. No more pensions. Right. And the minute that happens, I think the minute that Illinois were to do that, it would send a great message to the rest of the country that we're getting serious about flipping where we are. Collective bargaining reforms is the other two things. And suddenly Illinois is back in play. Corrupt is always going to be the big issue. So you always got to think about ethics, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, what do we say? Every dollar we spend in taxes, 40 to 60 cents of it goes to somebody in the know. It's crazy too, but you hit on the head there with the taxes thing, because that's one of the things that, and as we are taping this, you know, we're a couple days out from, or past rather, Governor Pritzker's quote unquote state of the state. And it was, I talked to John earlier in the week, and my takeaway, the thing that marked it for me, was that Pritzker comes out and says, hey, you know, it's been a tough time. Inflation is up. The state's doing really well because I've been doing such a great job. So as a gift to all of you and to offset this terrible inflation and toughness, i.e. make the, you know, administration in power look good, I'm going to roll back a bunch of these taxes and put them on pause and just reduce them for you for a while, which just shows you that the game is so fixed that the leaders in this state, which are all Democrat, can pile on taxes and then say, hey, look, I'm doing the responsible thing to balance our budget. But then when it comes, it becomes a politically savvy or good for them, they say, oh, you know what? I'm going to roll back some of those taxes for a little bit just so you feel good about yourself for right now. And that's the yo-yo game that the average citizen is stuck in. And as you said, you know, those are folks who are in the unions here. They're going to stay because they got a sweet deal. But those who aren't are going to flee because there's no reason not to be here.
Yeah, the question is, you know, what will they believe when they hear Pritzker say he's going to give all these benefits? At Wire Points, we just put out a piece about the gas tax, quote, relief that he's giving. And, you know, anybody who knows what's happening to the gas tax, and we lay that out there, you know, the gas taxes have gone up so fast in Illinois. You know, they were doubled in 2019. We have a sales tax, 6.25% on our gasoline. So as these prices skyrocket from inflation, well, guess what goes up to? The tax. So the taxes are up massively. And so what is the relief he's going to give us? It's not that he's going to cut the gas tax. He's only going to suspend the increase of 2 cents next year. Whoop-de-doo, right? I mean, that's not a relief. That's just not punishing us more. Or maybe, you know, back to your point, John, that's what it is, right? It's, you know, thank you, sir. May I have another?
People have to understand. Look, we can, when you start talking numbers, the problem is that the voters we're trying to reach, often just their eyes glaze over, right?
Right. But look at that two cent pause, John, real quick. Think about that as like a daily fill up. Let's say your gas tank holds on average 12 gallons. So we're talking 2 cents per pop. So two times what we're talking, 24 cents of fill up. Let's say you fill up every week. We're talking less than $50 a year that you're saving. But he's going to tout it as being this huge thing that he did for us. Oh, thank you, sir. But really, he's saving everybody, what, $50 a year?
Well, what's interesting is that it's not nice, but he says that that's going to save $135 million for taxpayers. Now, contrast that, or I guess the government's going to miss out on $135 million in revenues. Contrast that to he's given $125 million of his own money to his campaign. So it's kind of an interesting little comparison, right?
you know what, Pete, the way to look at this for listeners, people of Illinois, think of Pritzker at the state fair. He's standing in front of a box, and on the box is a piece of felt, like a cloth felt. And he's got three walnuts, you know, empty walnut halves. And he's playing the P. He says, find the P, or the Black Mariah, if it's cards. Find this. And the yokels are betting on it. And Pritzker's sleight of hand keeps moving the P around. And where is it? Where is it? Can you find the P? That's the game they're playing. Why are we even allowing them to do it? Why is media congratulating? I just can't take it. Why do they congratulate?
Well, it's pretty obvious.
Nonsense.
It's pretty obvious because they want, again, we're back to the seat of the table. You know, there's only one reporter that consistently challenges Pritzker, and she somehow manages to maintain her way in. That's, you know, Amy Jacobson. But the rest want to see the table. They don't want to be kicked out, so they've got to stay in line. Right? That's really it. Otherwise, you're called a naysayer. You're called a carnival barker. Pritzker's done a great job at segmenting, you know, the people who are with him and without him. And the minute you're tagged as a carnival barker, whatever, then those are, you know, persona non grata. They can't be invited. They're not part of the fun or the parties. I think he's done a fabulous job at that, in a very negative way, of course.
Yeah, and Ted, you're dead on there. It just seems like that there are plenty of reporters who do ask tough questions. I mean, Amy not does really. A lot. I mean, hey, well,
but Jeff, listen, not really. They'll ask a question. They'll ask a tough question.
Ask a follow up.
Right. They won't ask the follow up, and they'll let a bad answer stay, and that's the
problem. Right.
Yeah.
And Amy does. You know, she's gotten a bad rap.
Yeah.
Among the suck up political writers in this state, and they generally jump on her on these gossip websites where the lobbyists go to mock people under assumed names, and the state pays for it. I mean, it's all a scam, and we know it's a scam. And if you go to that kind of website to see people like Amy Jacobson be mocked, well, then, you know, what can I tell you? Yeah. You're just part of the problem. I'm not saying she's the goddess of Athena, but at the same time, she does ask the questions.
This is what you want. You want someone who's not going to take the first answer at its face.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think the responsibility is for the governor or the politicians we're talking about to give the proper, correct answers. Not, we can criticize the askers all we want, I guess, but the bottom line is we're not getting the truth or the facts out of the people that we expect them to come from.
Well, why would you expect the truth in this state?
Well, exactly. No. Well, you know, and I often say it's often in the country as well, but yes. I think we're just the best at being, you know, untruthful in the
country. So what are the population numbers now? You put that out, you studied them, and you suggested that with all this nonsense about, I'll save you 2 cents on a cheeseburger that I'll buy from you two days, whatever wimpy bullshit that is. And I meant wimpy from the cartoon character. Ted Dabrowski says that all you have to do instead of trying to parse all this stuff is look at population, the census data.
Look at where people are moving and look at where they're fleeing from. And you know, those are two very important things. You know, we talked, I think, a while back about the last census, right, from 2010 to 2020. There were 3 states that shrunk in the country, right? 3. And it was West Virginia, Mississippi, and guess who else? Illinois. You know, I guess in some way it's embarrassing, right? Because we are a great state. We're the, you know, 6th largest state. We're in the middle of the country. We have these great resources. We got O'Hare. We got the transportation hub. We've got a lake, a beautiful lake with fresh water. We got the soil. What is it we don't? We got the universities. You know, any state would love to have our resources. And you know, we own them. We got them. But we're really good at chasing away people.
Not to mention, we're also the most perfect international hub for, I don't know, every rail line in the country. And
yeah, Right. And so when you look at that, then you say, well, oh, yeah, but it's cold weather. That's why people are leaving. Well, no, we shrunk. But, you know, with Indiana grew by Indiana grew by 300,000 people. You know, Wisconsin grew by 200,000 people. They our cold weather neighbors grew and we shrunk. And so then you move to 2021, the latest census numbers. Again, all of our neighbors grew. Indiana grew by 20,000 people in 2021. We shrunk by 114,000 people. You know, that's like wiping out, you know, the city of what? Naperville or whatever city would be 115,000. That's, you know, that's the honest assessment that Pritzker ignores. And, you know, until we do the things to stop that flight, we'll just continue down the drain. It's maybe it's a slow process. Maybe it speeds up. I don't know. But that's what he's ignoring.
It's a process that's equivalent to a couple of decades. But Ted, you know, the thing that people, and even in the news industry, media, you know, reporters who I know and people who are cover this stuff, the census data they were touting in Chicago is like, oh, it's the first time in a long time the numbers are positive. They're all positive. You know, hey, it's a great thing. But if you take the number of people in the state and then average in what it is that to procreate and create new life, the numbers are just abysmal. We're not even keeping up with what would be an average birth rate in this country. We're way below that. And so for anybody to say, oh, well, it's a good thing, the numbers look up. No, it's not. We're still at a net loss over the last two decades, regardless of what you want, how you want to spin it. And well, nobody realizes that.
Well, I've got some work coming out pretty soon whenever I get to it. But you know, I've looked at the numbers. 1950, Chicago was 3.7 million people. 3.7. And you can imagine what the demographics might have been back then. Now you look today, it's 2.7, right? So a million people lost, you know, huge flight of whites. You've had, you know, the Hispanics have, if the Hispanics had not come in, Chicago would be, it'd be done because the population would have collapsed. You know, Hispanics, there's now more Hispanics than blacks in Chicago. So in that time frame, had the Hispanics not come in, it'd be done. And people don't know that.
Middle-class black people are leaving.
That's right. And then you've got the huge flight. You got the black flight as well. You had, you know, 200,000 blacks leave from 2000 to 2010, and then another 85,000 leave from 2010 to 2020. So you've got it's a total, you know, redo. And God knows what this city really looks like right now after COVID. We have no idea what's going to be left there.
If I'm an investor, I want certainty, or at least some semblance of certainty, don't I? I want to be at least have some kind of predictability. So why would I invest in Illinois? And why would I invest in Chicago when kids are going to get shot off the porch and you have a prosecutor in Cook County who won't do anything and they brag about emptying the jail? I mean, how am I supposed to get people to invest in the city?
You know, if you're making an economic decision, you've got Austin and Atlanta and Nashville and Indianapolis. I mean, you've got a lot of good places to go. And I that's one of the arguments I make, John, is that when people like, well, Warren Buffett said it, what, 3 years ago, he said, when I look at all those liabilities, those pension liabilities, why would I be the one to build a plant in Illinois so that I can get stuck with that bill? He said, heck no. And you know, anybody who's making a rational decision. Now, we are the sixth largest state, so you're going to have some. You have to invest something here, right? Because you know you've got a big part of the population. But when you're looking at the marginal dollar, you're looking at a headquarters or a manufacturing plant that serves the whole country. Well, and you look at the labor laws. We haven't even talked about Amendment 1, where they want to enshrine the collective bargaining laws for public sectors into the Constitution. That's a suicide move. Right. Then why would I build a plant or, you know, something that I can build, you know, in the Carolinas or Florida or Texas or Tennessee? So it's a real tough one.
The other day I was, now that I'm, you know, on my own and running my own small business here at John Cass News, I had occasion to speak to, I don't know, about 70, 100 people at dinner downtown in the Gold Coast. They're mostly, I would say, Republican or at least conservative. They have money. They're lawyers, board, you know, they're on boards, that kind of thing. And I asked them, raise your hand if you know someone in your family or a close friend who is insisting on staying in Illinois. And no one raised their hand. No one. What does that tell you?
You know, and I would imagine if you went to the border and asked people, you know, like if you went to, I don't know, Iowa or Missouri or Indiana and asked the same question to people, how many of you are dying to move into Illinois? And I think that's what people forget. It's the double whammy. At the margin, we're going to lose people. And at the margin, we're not going to gain people in the way that we used to. And that combination, that might be the surprise after we look at these numbers. Because if both things go at the same time at a bigger rate, then the problem is much bigger than we think it is. And nobody really, I don't think people think about that enough. But, you know, the more negative press that you get out of Illinois, the more that people who are outside Illinois say, why would I move there? I'm going somewhere else instead.
Well, do you guys remember Pate Phillip, the Republican Senate president? Mm-hmm. Yep. Pate was gruff and I think a Marine, a cigar smoker, and which I liked about him. And and he was blunt, good politician, blunt in many ways. One day he said, in Chicago, you have the eaters. They eat. In DuPage, we have the producers. They produce revenue, right? The eaters of revenue, the producers of revenue. That was like 20 years ago. And I remember the newsroom at the time freaking out like, oh my God, how dare you say that? But people make their own calculations. They do cost benefit analysis at home and they decide accordingly, don't they, Ted?
They really do. And, you know, it doesn't mean that they actually sit down and do a spreadsheet. You know, you can be either sophisticated, like I wrote about the guy, one of my neighbors, who left a few years ago for the Colorado area. And, yeah. You know, he actually did that. You know, he did a little spreadsheet. He said, look, I save $27,000 a year in property taxes if I move to Colorado. Over 20 years at 6%, that was $1 million. And he said that was all he needed to know. Other people, you know, they're not doing that calculation, but they're like struggling. You know, their property tax bill is too high. Their home values are falling. If you just drive around Peoria, just drive around Decatur, and you will know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And they don't have to do some fancy calculation. They just hear from their buddies over in Indiana who are saying, things are a lot better here. The taxes are cheaper. The schools are better. Come on over. And that's the calculation. It's a simple calculation.
If you go from a high-tech state where you're paying $20,000 to a low-tech state where you're paying $2,400 in property taxes, you just gave yourself a $25,000 raise, didn't you?
Yeah.
You have to make more money than you pay in taxes just to satisfy the tax collector.
Well, yeah, and it's a massive raise. And then don't forget, those states don't have the same problems we have. We're not even at the beginning of having to raise taxes to pay for these pensions. So, you know, the numbers you just compared, that $20,000 in Illinois is going to go up really high, where the $2,400 in another state won't go up as much. So it's a losing game.
The math is simple, right? I mean, this state, Illinois, has a massive, as you've said, probably one of the highest debt ratios in the country. And if you have a dwindling population to cover that bill, it only serves a purpose that you don't need a fancy spreadsheet that it's that the average person is going to have to foot a much larger bill. And I've seen it firsthand. I spent the holidays with my brother's, his family in South Carolina, and they left this state because my brother's wife is one of those people. She's a very organized. She has a spreadsheet for everything, for their budgets. And it was stark. As soon as the math cleared, she saw there's no way we can spend another minute in this state. And they fled to South Carolina, where they have a massive house and the kids have a beautiful brand new high school and they have all these amenities and things and they don't pay anything for anything. And if people see that, like I'm seeing it firsthand now for my brother, imagine all the other people who have gone to visit a relative out of state. And then you look at, Ted, you were talking about Decatur and Peoria. That's one of those places where Zillow, we've all seen the stories about Zillow buying up this, buying up that. They bought up so many houses and gave all these people the opportunity to just take that money and go somewhere else. And what do? They left the state. And it's just depressing.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And I tell you, the other part that Pritzker ignores is that we live in the most, you know, most mobile, digital, era ever. And so, and there's, you know, so many jobs that are open right now. So, you know, you're not scared. You're going to be less scared to say, okay, damn it. You know, I've wanted to stay in Illinois. This is my home state. And, you know, and I meet lots of people who love Illinois, that not the bad part of it, but this is their home. This is where they've worked. This is where their family is. They went to high school or college. They don't want to leave here. But, you know, but now the risk of picking up and going to Atlanta or Carolina, there's so many jobs out there and you can work from anywhere these days. So, you know, what the hell? It's worth a try. I can always come back home if it doesn't work. And, you know, that's a reality as well. And our politicians ignore that. They forget that one of the biggest complaints I have is our politicians don't know how to compete. They don't think in competitive terms. And if you've never been in the private sector, which many of them haven't, I guess a lot of them are lawyers, they don't know how to compete. And you know, you have to compete for people, for companies, and you got to be good, and you got to have a great environment. You know, got to get rid of all these regulations that keep people from setting up businesses and hanging their shingles. It's got to be easy. It should be super easy. And we don't do that.
The first part about competition is knowing what you want to do. And that's where we started and where we end. Because when I see a guy like Richard Irvin, the mayor of Aurora, the one who's being protected and looks like he's basically shot his foot off politically, at least as far as I'm concerned, because you only get one chance to make a first impression, and he hasn't done it. The problem is when you don't know what you want, other people will decide what they want, and they'll just pass you by.
Yeah. No? Yeah. Well, that's comes back to principles. If you don't have your own principles, then somebody's going to make it. You know, if you don't have your own culture, they make it for you. All kinds of stuff like that. So that's the problem we have in with Illinois politicians. Well, I think the reformers aren't there, and we need the ones who could be potential reformers don't have their own principles, and that's the problem.
And you talked about the competition and not knowing how to compete. Is it any surprise, I would assert, that the leadership in this state, which is obviously Democrat, they haven't had any real competition in primaries or any of those races, because the state, for the most part, where they live is so carved out to be hegemonious, and you know, everyone agrees and votes the same way. That's why we're losing to every state.
Well, that's another competition issue. You're right. The way we've drawn our maps and run our state with, you know, the Madigan's rules and all that, that survive. You know, he may not be here, but his machine is still, you know, right there, you know, running very smoothly.
It's falling apart. And look, he's not here to herd the cats. You can see what the Democrats are doing to themselves, but you can't make the argument if you're speaking in a silent room. And the problem overarching all of it is that as long as you have corporate legacy, corrupt media carrying water for these progressives and the Democrats and the political writers and the others who, you know, the institutions that feed off politics are amenable, you can't get the argument going. It's just not the Chicago Way podcast and Dan and Amy and my column at John Cass News. You have to have other voices, and you don't have them. No?
Yeah, that's the problem. And it's, you know, I always argue it starts with the corporate elite. Not even the corporate media, but the corporate elite, because, you know, this is a town that has massive amount of talent at the corporate level, you know, huge companies and very influential ones. And yet for the last however many years, they've been complicit because either they gain from the system.
Yes, of course they do.
They gain from the system and they want to be at the party. So they don't want to be cut out. And, you know, the machine that's been built here can easily cut out a corporate, you know, some big shot. They don't want to be cut out. So they line up, and they line up for Lori Lightfoot or Rahm Emanuel or Governor Pritzker.
And now they're going to be lining up for the White Shadow Duncan. He's getting some more pub all the time. I guess he shows up in op-eds. And look, you want that? Go ahead. Enjoy yourselves. But there are people who just won't take it anymore.
Well, we kind of go back to the argument that, you know, this crop of leaders are not going to fix Illinois. And at Wire Points, you know, we've trying to put out as many solutions as we can on the finances, on the property taxes, you know, certainly pushing back on the COVID mandates, because we argue we can't have a functioning state and a functioning city, Chicago, with the continuation of executive orders from one person. It looks like it's going to have to take a crash of some kind. We don't know what it looks like when it happens. And all we can be is hopeful that when things get really bad, that there's really good ideas and a few good people waiting around. And hopefully at that point we can, you know, take over with ideas, take over with people, and turn around this state, because right now it's on a path that seems really hard to get it off that path.
I don't see it happening. And what I do see, and I can predict the future, which is that Jeff Carlin will find some Calliope music in post-production and put it on this track now. And well, because where we are, you've outlined it, Ted, Wire Points, you and Mark Glennon have outlined this problem, and Dan and Amy have outlined this, Illinois Policy Institute, and the guy talking with the voice of the Nightingale has been doing this for years. And all we're seeing is a game of musical chairs where the Illinois residents who don't want to be without a chair will flee, because this is a Ponzi scheme. Tell me I'm wrong.
I'm not telling you wrong. I'm not telling you wrong. The only question is how fast this happens, and when the music stops, you know, are we ready with something better? Because this place is too good. It's got too many great assets, and you know, we hate to see it, you know, become an emaciated version of itself, where it's going to be hard to pick up the pieces afterwards.
So then the idea is to buy gold and have and have a bunch of it ready to drop when everything bottoms out, right? You let the gangs go. Here's what they used to do in the old days, and I guess they're still doing it. You let the gangs go crazy in a neighborhood. You drive all the people out. Because they can't handle crime and they're sick of it. And then you know what happens? The real estate guys move in, swoop in, buy everything on the cheap, and then make a fortune.
Yeah. You know, I just as we talk about this, right when Detroit went bankrupt,
right.
I'd never been there before, and I went there with a friend from Detroit, and we went there, drove around. I got to meet three really influential people there who could really talk about the bankruptcy and why it happened, you know, the history. And one of the books I was recommended to read is called Detroit, An American Autopsy by a guy named Charlie LaDuff. And He's a columnist. He's a Detroit news guy. Yeah, he worked at the Times. And he writes this book, you know, I found it fascinating because, you know, if you know Chicago, if you know public policy and you start to put all these pieces together, he writes a book about how Detroit went through, right? Detroit was amazing in 1950, right? Of course, there's a one trick pony with the industry, with the auto industry, but it's collapse, and how it happens. Every 5 years, there's some kind of bailout, but every five years, people keep leaving. You know, it feels like we're playing that out here. Of course, Detroit's a different thing, but the story and the parallels are pretty impressive.
We should get Charlie on the podcast.
Idea.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Yeah.
So thanks, Ted, and I hope you keep a chair, because I don't know if I can keep my chair anymore. I mean, it's just the way things are going with crime and with violence and with stupidity, political stupidity on the Republican side and the Democratic side.
Well, I do argue one thing, John, that you can escape Illinois, but there's a lot of bad stuff going on countrywide, as we know from the politics and the stuff that's happening. So I just argue this is ground zero. So if you want to fight it, this is a great place to fight it. But don't think that when you go somewhere else, you're not going to see it.
Well, or we could to solve Jeff's problem of the replacement number for births, maybe go to Hungary.
Right.
For Ted Dabrowski of Wire Points, an excellent analyst, good friend, and thanks for being here, Ted.
Thank you, guys.
And for Jeff Carlin, my buddy, co-host here on the Chicago Way, executive producer at WGN Radio. Thanks for being here, everyone. I'm John Cass, husband, father, proprietor at John Cass News. Hope you subscribe so I can pay my taxes. And thanks for joining us on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.